From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of April, 2018. I'm Yovi Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. And something brand new for Glenn today. He's been banting a word around that you rarely hear from him. He's in for Jackie Vakes, who's out of the office this afternoon. A bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. To that with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, I'll update you on all the agricultural news for this Wednesday afternoon. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Jackie Vakes is not available today. Glenn Ring has graciously agreed to join us from Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. Glenn, thanks for taking time with us. What's the most interesting part of the market for you today?
Breakout in the CRB index, the old Thomson Reuters CRB index. We've pushed to the highest high we've seen since the October of 2015. We had made highs in June of 2016 and in January 2017. We cracked those highs in January, but backed off, consolidated, classic February break in there. Important thing was after the January high and we got the February break, we didn't trend down. We just held our ground and treaded water, and now we pushed, like I say, to a new high above that January high. So the key for me now is to maintain this for the week. Well, one thing you don't want if you want to be optimistic is to have a weekly reversal down. But holding this thing together for the balance of the week would be a tremendous positive, and it gives us a chance to get a rising tide that lifts most commodity boats. I'm not going to say all, but maybe most.
Deal with them separately. Start with corn. Where do you see this market going?
Well, I don't do actual predictions as to what I expect, but the potential here is pretty impressive. We've got corn that made its yearly low so far in January, and I track off the December contract. We've done that four times in 48 years. Which is a potential positive. The interesting thing about the January lows is we those four times in the last 48 years, we never peaked before mid-year. So I'm pretty optimistic on corn right now. I see it consolidating. This time of year, I track the December as my main indicator market. Corn and beans both. I would like to see old crop regain some of the ground they've lost to new crop. I understand the planting issues, et cetera, give new crop a reason to be a leader, and that's fine. But for this thing to be sustained, I'd like to see it be driven by both old and new crop. There's some parallels here, Todd, that are very interesting. There's similarities in the way the year is unfolding to me to 1988 and 1993. And I don't really want to hold out 88 as a prime example because that was a drought year. I don't know that that's coming. I'm talking about behavioral patterns, time of year that they made lows so far, the way we've consolidated through the first part of the year. And, you know, we've been biased upward, but we still haven't really run. We've been doing a lot of consolidating along the way. And that's what we did in 88 and a little bit lesser than 93. But the timing gets me here is, both of those years, we ran up into the June to mid-year time frame. And it's the kind of year I see right now. I'm more interested right now in time than price. But upside potential in corn, December corn has, I can make a good case for something into at least the 430, 429, 430 area. Pretty solid case for 449 to 450. And believe it or not, 517 has been in my vocabulary for 2018 as a possibility.
That is hard to believe. Does that mean that rumor around that you bantied the bullish word about is true?
Keep it quiet. Don't let people know. But yes, my reputation has gotten, belies reality. I'm a trend follower. Go with what the market tells me. And look, we haven't been able to sustain a new low in corn since 2014. You know, so yes, this whole thing since then could be a consolidation before eventually going lower. But first, I'm ready for a flash rally. We can go as high as 517 and still be in trouble for 2019. So let's enjoy it while we can. Let's see what happens. But boy, if we can clear the current January high in corn. And the current April high in corn, which are just 0.75 cents apart, so call it 417 on December. We could have some real fire in this thing for, yeah. Well, think 2016 in soybeans, and that's the kind of run that we could see in corn.
Yeah, so fundamentally, what is it that might spark the old crop? I would think it would almost have to be a really late planting season for, well, unless there's some demand that I'm just not familiar with, but a really late planting season for corn or drought or something in the June-July time frame.
Well, I've got an answer. I got another answer for that.
Okay.
A couple of things. One, I 2 years ago on April 16th, I planted sweet corn. This year on April 16th, I had frozen ground, you know, because it had been cold that night. We'd gotten into the teens for the temp. You know, nothing has happened here in Southwest Iowa to speak of yet. I mean, barely. I didn't see a lot of anhydrous go on. So I do think that the planting issue is a serious one here. So in that year, you could see some similarities like '93, you know, because of all the rain we had. But I think there's another one out here. How about the double-edged sword called this thing called a trade war? What if all of a sudden there's a nice agreement and all of a sudden things are hunky dory and China comes back into our markets more actively rather than less into our ag commodities. The possibility that if we don't trend down on the bad news, that could be a good sign if we get any good news there. So I think it could be a psychological game, to be honest with you, and money flow. The liquidity that's in the system has to be incredible. I'm talking about dollars that are out there. And that doesn't mean that it predicts inflation or not. I mean, because we've had mass liquidity since 9/11, but in particular since 2007-08, when we put bank bailouts and a TARP over everything, and QE1, QE2, QE38, and all that other stuff. There's massive amounts of liquidity, and if the money wants to flow, we could drive prices on what I call flash runs. Flash runs would be runs that last 8 to 13 weeks, get people excited, and then we'll see what we do with them. You know, if we flash up into mid-year in the corn and beans, I could be interested in going back to an attitude of selling, 2 to 3 years crop, but take it one step at a time.
So for China, that would be soybeans, obviously, but also cereal grains other than corn, I would think. So sorghum.
I would think it still wouldn't hurt the psychology in corn, too. You see what I'm getting is the psychology in the marketplace. I just think put it this way. I don't need a fundamental excuse if the money wants to flow. You know, because we've seen it before on these runs when the specs get running, et cetera. Just don't stand in front of them, because you're going to get trampled. So if the market wants to make new highs, I'm going with it, is my basic attitude.
What do you think the last month of the soybean market has meant for the coming months?
Well, when we ran up into early March, I think I was friendly, actually surprisingly friendly, before many, if not most, that I catch wind from. And that goes all the way back, by the way, to last fall. And winter, because I had marked the October lows as keys, and when we broke those and we didn't sustain the breakout below the October lows, that I said something's going on here. So then I had marked the fall highs as a benchmark. So we went ahead and broke that in February, ran up in early March. At that point in time, I wanted to see soybeans go on hold and go on hold for a month or two. I'd just as soon they not come alive until early May again. But the fact that we haven't trended down in this environment, to me, it's incredibly friendly, potentially. It's all based upon potential right now. The action to this date is not bearish this year. I mean, period, it's not bearish. Yeah, the day of go back to the acreage report. I wrote an 11-page newsletter that talked about the Planet acreage reports and how dangerous they are to buy into or sell into on that at that particular point, what they told you. The volatility should be what it was on the day of the report and beans, the corn bullish, next day nothing, reverse back down. But then just two trading days later, we get the tariff news and we slam the market down, and yet we can't sustain the break. And the prior trend was up, I'm talking about for 2018 to that point, and we can't sustain the break on bad news. We've consolidated since then. This action is not bearish. It's friendly, and all we need is a reason to get above the prior highs, and once we do, there's a good chance this thing will sustain and run. And you know, I've thrown out numbers to my farm groups of, like, you know, 1280 beans. I've thrown out numbers like 1480 beans under the right scenario this year. Like I say, don't get in front of the money if it wants to flow. I've also warned my groups, though, however, this is the kind of year where I could see 1280 to 14.5, 1480, and 750 beans in the same year, depending upon how we unfold it. If we get people too wild, too excited, and get it done by roughly mid-year, and then all of a sudden, whoops, trade deal falls apart. Whoops, we got everything planted after all, stuff like that. Like I say, I could see this to be a year that we play both sides with some pretty big swings.
So there is a lot of opportunity, in your opinion, in the marketplace as it relates to volatility.
One of the keys I wrote about 2018 early on was this year won't be boring. And so far, I'm satisfied. Right now, we've had an issue with momentum. But that can be changing with the CRB breaking out to new highs today. If this thing stays, if this thing lasts at all, that's historically a good sign for crop markets. They tend to attract the CRB fairly well, especially corn and soybeans. So, yeah, I think we could run up and then let's see what we do with it, and we get into June. The hotter we get, I don't mean weather, I'm talking about market action, the more worried I'll be about making highs in around mid-year or a little bit before.
Always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for taking the time with me. Any final word before I let you go?
Well, you know, this would be a feather in your cap, getting able to break the news that I can talk bullish too. So.
There you go, indeed. Thanks so much. That, of course,
all right, Todd.
Yeah, that of course is Glenn Ring. He is with Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. In today's agricultural news, Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley is angry that EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt continues to defy his boss, President Trump, by handing out renewable fuels waivers that the ethanol industry and Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue say are destroying biofuel demand. Grassley dismisses the suspicion that Pruitt and Trump are working hand in hand to give with one hand and take away with the other.
I believe that Pruitt is a loose cannon. Not carrying out the president's wishes. We get a victory in November saying that we're going to go to the 15 billion gallons, and then through 25 waivers, there might be one or two of them that are hardship waivers, but we know some definitely not hardship waivers, that he gives with one hand and takes away with the other.
So what confidence does Grassley have that Pruitt will carry out the president's commitment to a waiver for year-round use of E15 blended gas?
Well, because that comes directly from the president's mouth. I don't see how an EPA director can screw up in any way what the president is directed to get done, as long as the president's within the law.
Grassley, meantime, led a bipartisan group of 13 senators in writing EPA's Pruitt to stop issuing RFS hardship waivers, disclose and justify waivers given, and whether waived volumes were redistributed to other firms, and issue waivers only during annual RFS rulemaking. The ethanol industry estimates 1 billion gallons in lost biofuel demand due to the waivers, some to large multi-billion dollar firms. Well, from ethanol, let's move to the Farm Bill legislation. Farmers are more concerned, apparently, with trade and being burdened with overregulation rather than the Farm Bill. This, according to one U.S. Senator, Republican Roy Blunt of Missouri, said during a Senate hearing last week that the Farm Bill never came up during a recent listening session with farmers in his state. as pointed out by the Food and Environmental Reporting Network. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue told Congress that low commodity prices, slumping farm income, attacks on the ethanol industry, and a possible trade war are all causing anxiety in farm country. Perdue says those issues have overshadowed farm bill discussions, even as the House Agriculture Committee released its draft of the farm bill late last week, and markup continues today. Meanwhile, House Ag Ranking Democrat Colin Peterson described the farm bill to reporters last week as the fifth item farmers bring up right now. Peterson says some groups never bring up the farm bill and instead focus on the other issues impacting agriculture. Well, the Farm Bill draft release, speaking of that, by the House Ag Committee, includes provisions that would reverse decades of precedents and usher in an era of unlimited farm subsidies for the nation's largest mega farms. This is according to the National Sustainable Ag Coalition. The coalition calls the Farm Bill a brazen attempt to undo years of statute for the benefit of the nation's largest farm operators. The bill, according to the coalition, would exempt most corporate farms from being limited to a single payment and make it easier for large farms to reorganize as family farms. The coalition also says the draft would remove payment limitations from marketing loan gains and loan deficiency payments and exempt partnerships, joint ventures, LLCs, and subchapter S corporations from the adjusted gross income means testing provision. And finally today, the sorghum producers say they're deeply disappointed in the preliminary anti-dumping determination issued by China's Ministry of Commerce. China slapped a 179% tariff on U.S. sorghum imports. NSP says it has submitted several thousand pages of data demonstrating conclusively that U.S. sorghum is neither dumped nor causing any injury to China. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, we just can't get away from winter weather, and it's dropping a lot of snow. So, for instance, tell me about this last episode. How much snowfall did we get?
My goodness. Over 33 inches occurred in east-central parts of Wisconsin, and a broad region of 8 to 20 inches occurred from parts of Nebraska and South Dakota into southern Minnesota and the rest of Wisconsin. So that was a very impressive event. And, of course, we're getting it again, like you just said. At this time, we are seeing significant snow occurring across northern Iowa and parts of southern Minnesota and the southeast corner of South Dakota. We're expecting to see anywhere from 3 to 6 and local 8-inch amounts of accumulation occurring in that area as we go forward through the afternoon and into the evening. And then a part of that storm system will go ahead and move through southern Wisconsin and the northernmost counties in Illinois over to southern Michigan. But it will be weakening as it heads further to the east, so there will be a lot less snow in some of those areas. But you're right. For this time of the year, we're getting way too much snow, and hopefully this will be the last of the snow-producing events for a while.
The last of the snow-producing events. But once it's on the ground, we really are going to have some warmer weather to get that cleared off, and so that the sun can actually beat down and unfreeze or thaw this ground out, I would think. Anything in the future there?
Yeah, I think we are going to start a bit of a warming trend. I'm not real convinced we're going to get very far above average, but we'll come back to more normal. And, you know, it's now late enough in the year that normal is not too bad. We can melt snow very quickly. And the snow that has occurred and is falling yet today is a wet snow. It's a wet, slushy snow, and so it will disappear fairly quickly if we can get a couple of days in a row of 50s and maybe some 60s taking place, which I think will take place as we get into the coming weekend and again into next week with a short-term interruption in between. So I think we're going to move in the right direction, but certainly these northern Midwest locations are going to have a real hard time getting aggressive into the fields anytime real soon. That's a little different from areas from Kansas into the Ohio River Valley area, where we'll probably be able to string almost 7 days of relatively dry weather together with temperatures in the 60s and a few lower 70s, where I think we'll get some significant field work done.
Oh, well, that is good news. So producers will be able to move in those areas. How about the Delta regions? How far along are they at this point, and are you concerned at all for them?
Well, you know, there has been a lot of concern that field work hasn't moved very well in that area, but this is prime time for them, and I think we're going to see some good progress made. We do have that same storm that I think we've been chatting about for a while coming out of hard red winter wheat country late this week, and it will move right through the Delta this weekend and into the southeastern corner of the U.S. And so in response, there will be a disruption to field work in those areas. But it's not going to rain very frequently after that. We may see a few showers and thunderstorms again next week in a couple of different locations, but it's not going to be widespread. So I do think the Delta in the southeast will begin to progress a lot faster with field work, and their daily high temperatures will be a lot warmer than the Midwest, too, and that should help the drying rates between events.
You mentioned the hard red winter wheat growing regions, Texas, Oklahoma, parts of Kansas. Storm rainfall there that can help alleviate the dry conditions?
Well, I don't know if we want to use the word alleviate, at least not when it comes to West Texas or the Texas Panhandle, but we will ease the dryness. The latest computer forecast model is starting to edge down some of this rainfall potential. It's still going to rain in all areas, don't get me wrong, but I think some of those amounts in the Texas Panhandle and extreme southwest Kansas, extreme southeastern Colorado may not be much more than maybe 0.2 to 0.8 inches. And not that that's nothing, something, yeah, whatever. You don't want to complain about it. Any moisture is better than nothing there, but it will be greater in the heart of Kansas and central Oklahoma, where we will see amounts of 0.6 to maybe as much as 2 inches, and that'll make a huge difference for some of that wheat crop. So we're looking for that to begin late Thursday night, more likely to be a Friday, Saturday evening.
And one last item, South America, the safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil. Concerns, doing well, dry season about to begin?
Well, yeah, I think it is doing well at the moment. We have been seeing some topsoil firming here this week in parts of Paraná and parts of São Paulo, as well as southern Mato Grosso do Sul into southern Paraguay. And that's kind of an important area. It doesn't need to dry down anymore, but they will. I think there will be a few showers and thunderstorms in Mato Grosso do Sul coming up here over the next couple of days, and then, but it's not going to reach into the rest of that drying area. And some of that drying region will probably see very little rain until the second weekend of the two-week outlook, when we'll get a frontal system to bring some moisture. So we are getting more concerned about the drying trend, but the crop right now is in great shape. It's all about May, though, when that crop reproduces, and it's going to be imperative that they get some timely rain by then.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated.